Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Iran's retaliatory strike on Israel is a game changer. A new red line has been established. Tehran no longer will outsource its confrontation with Israel. Meanwhile, the Gaza genocide continues. Crosstalking Escalation, I'm joined by my guest, Eric Wahlberg in Toronto. He is a writer, journalist, and author of The Canada-Israel Nexus. In Beirut, we have Leila Khartoum. She is a co-founder of MideastWire.com. And in Latakia, we cross to Stephen Sahuni. He is an award-winning journalist and chief editor of Mideast Discourse. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Leila, let me go to you first in Beirut here. In my introduction, I called this a game changer and new red lines have been established. Do you agree with that?
Well, it's always basically a new line that's being pushed. The red line has been established long time ago. There's a balance of terror and balance of power in this region that everybody tries to test every now and then. And with the new basically attacks that happened and the retaliation, everybody knows what the other side is capable of. I mean, at the end of the day, some people consider it theatrical by the Iranians. However, if you look at it closely, the Iranians managed to hit two Israeli military bases, one in North Palestine and one basically in Naqab, Novatim, and the one closer to Dimona. So the idea is that everything else that they used was just a decoy, and they achieved their goal. The Israelis now know what is at stake. They might take it a notch further just to save face at one point or another, or basically because Netanyahu wants to save his hide, as they say, by creating that war, because without war, he's going to go to trial and people are going to skin him alive. So new red lines are being drawn all the time. The thing is, the escalation is the thing that we see basically increasing.
Well, you know, go ahead. Eric, I mean, do we have a new balance of deterrence right now? Because Western media is downplaying the Iranian strike. But if you look at people that have a more honest viewpoint, I mean, this is quite catastrophic for Israel. This is the first time that Israel experienced something like that. So is there a new balance of deterrence in the region?
Well, absolutely. If you, Scott Ritter made the very telling point that Hezbollah has actually expanded its borders. It's controlling now North Israel. North Israel is indefensible, and I don't think those settlers will ever be able to go back. So there's one aspect. And also Iran has expanded its borders right to Israel. It's shown that it is capable of reaching and making Israel its inimical neighbor. So Israel is no longer, it's completely surrounded now. And Iran is part of that neighborhood. It's almost like Iran's announced itself as a legitimate and integral part of the new Middle East.
Yeah, well, it's a neighbor you can't ignore, okay? You can ignore it at your peril, let's put it that way. Stephen, so if we can go back, the all of these events, you know, I don't like to use October 7th as the beginning of something. It is very much in the part of the historical process that we've seen 75 years of Zionism. But if we do take October 7th, what has Israel achieved? It's lost in Gaza. It has killed tens and tens of thousands of defenseless people, mostly women and children. As Eric has pointed out, Israeli citizens in the north of Israel cannot return. And we have what's going on in the West Bank. I mean, Israel's has had a string of failures here. Stephen.
Yes, that is true. Israel lately, not only actually in this war, it's been starting the failure since the war 2006 with South Lebanon, Hezbollah. That was a big failure. The war in Gaza, the first war in Gaza in 2007, I think, also it was a failure. 2014 was a failure. And also in 2020 also was a failure. And now this one is a big failure. For 6 months, Israel has been using all kind of weapons, bombing from land, air, and sea, Yes, they killed 40,000 people, but they did not rescue their hostages. They did not stop the missiles from... The missiles are still going on from the north, east, west, all over. The leaders of the Al-Qassam Brigade and Hamas are still in power. Hamas is still in power. They achieved nothing today. And this is... And this is starting to reflect on Benjamin Netanyahu. And this is why we're seeing the people, the Israeli settlers and citizens in the streets of Tel Aviv and Jerusalem in big numbers. And they are increasing more and more, because they have achieved nothing. And now he is trying to move his own people and the whole region and the United States into a regional war just for one thing only. And that is he doesn't want to lose his chair as prime minister.
Well, I also think, I mean, it's neither here nor there if it's about Netanyahu. It's about the Zionist project. And the Zionist project is meeting its a lot of barriers right now and a lot of pushback here. Leila, one of the most interesting things about Israel's, how Israel and its Western allies reacted to Iran's retaliation is that it made it perfectly clear that Israel cannot do this on its own. It must have the United States, it must have France, it must have the UK. That's a very perilous position for everyone to be in. We know that Joe Biden is feckless and weak, but he's essentially signing up for Israel's security in a very meaningful way, in a very expensive way. I'll also point out that is one of the game-changing elements here too. Go ahead, in Beirut.
Yes, definitely. I mean, we've seen it during the Iranian attacks on the Israeli occupation entity. We saw the British, the American, and even the German warplanes coming over to basically help the Israelis down some of those drones and those ballistic missiles that were thrown or basically directed at the Israeli entity. However, you have to understand, Israel is a colonial project. So all the colonials who have helped create it are the ones who continue to pump in money and basically arms to keep them surviving over there. When it comes to Biden, he had lost most of the votes in terms of Arabs and those who are against this war that's happening. However, what he's banking on is going forward with the Americans continuing to help the Israelis, he would go to these elections and tell the neoconservatives and those basically who support the Israelis in his society that we came into the rescue, we helped Israel, we continue to stand with it. How much will this help him in the elections? I highly doubt, basically, because people are now basically waking up to the reality that the Israelis are criminals, they're killing Palestinians, they're committing a genocide that has been ongoing not only for the past 7 months, but also for the past 75 years. Yeah. And I don't think basically the international conscience, let alone basically the Americans inside America, the United States, would agree to that. We've seen the polls showing a change of heart and mind towards what the Israeli entity is all about and what their leadership in the U.S. are doing.
Well, you know, Eric, it's very interesting. Joe Biden's first reaction, public reaction to it, was to call a meeting of the G7, which I guess these people just don't see the irony of it. Of course, these are the former colonial powers and the powers that created the modern Middle East here. Would it be fair to say, because I've been saying this, that the G7 is turning itself into the axis of genocide?
Along with NATO, I guess. Biden is still seeing the world through American European lens. That's the world. When it talks about world opinion, he's really just referring to the white colonial powers. So when I think of world opinion, I think of the broader world opinion, very much along the lines of what Putin has talked about, that there is a new axis of peaceful powers that are anti-imperialist. So but Biden is still in that narrow mindset. And another good analogy, I think, is Israel is like a cuckoo. It's born, and now the U.S. and its parents keep feeding it endlessly until, and the cuckoo's life is not an easy one. Often they get pushed out of the nest, or they die, or else they kill their host. So we're in that in-between stage now, where Israel is really taken on all of the energy of its parents, and it's sucking them dry. So whether this can continue indefinitely, well, it can't. So I think that, but how the cuckoo finally dies, that's the issue we have to deal with now.
Well, brought up the true international community and real global public opinion, and it's very, very clear where that stands. Again, it's just the global south versus the rich north, white north also in this case here. But, you know, I can remember very clearly when after the Iranian Revolution, throwing the Shah out, and then the American embassy was taken by students, and how outraged the United States was, because that's diplomatic territory, a sovereign territory. But no one in the West even wanted to debate it at the Security Council about what Israel did to the diplomatic compound in Damascus. I mean, the whole world sees this rank hypocrisy.
This is the United States double standard. The United States was supporting the Shah of Iran. The Arab states were supporting the Shah of Iran. Even Israel had no problem with Iran. But when it came, a system and a government came in Iran that is anti-Israel and anti-imperialism, then they flipped and then they started using the Shiite Sunni. The Shiite Sunni conflict, besides making it Israel Arab, and that is what America and Israel has been pumping money and billions of dollars on for the last 30-40 years. Today Israel's been bombing the Iranian IRGC in Syria. They've been killing their officers. Iran has been being patient and not trying to take
Stephen, I'm sorry, I have to jump in here. We have to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on escalation. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaVelle. To remind you, we're discussing escalation. You know, Layla, I was very aghast but not surprised by how Western politicians and media reacted to this. David Cameron was talking about, you know, how it was disproportional. Well, number one, all of the facilities that we know that were attacked were military and intelligence. There was no loss of life, though there was an injury. They won't show us what really happened, which is really odd because they love to show destruction all the time. And then you have, you know, this disproportionate bit. I mean, it's so amazing to me. What about what's happening in Gaza? I mean, is that proportionate? I mean, even when confronted, these people cannot look at you in the eye and speak the truth. Go ahead. It's astounding.
It's actually not mind baffling at all after living with that kind of occupation for the longest time. So we know their tactics and what they do. They draw it from the past colonial powers. They do the same. They victimize themselves whenever they are found wrong. So at the end of the day, they continue to kill. For example, they've had assassinated Iranian officials and scientists over the past decades. They've killed not only basically the head of the Al-Quds Brigades, but they have also killed scientists over the past 2 years. We've seen that. They've committed atrocities inside Iran as well. And when the retaliation came, they were like, oh, we are being under attack. Well, you attacked first. That's the first thing. The second thing is that I want to draw your attention to something, that the colonial powers will always come to the aid of the Israelis when it comes to an attack against an embassy or whatever basically diplomatic mission it is. Remember, the U.S. actually attacked the French diplomatic mission in Libya when the French refused to allow the Americans to use their airspace to go and bombard Libya. Then they attacked the Chinese diplomatic mission basically in Europe. And if I remember, it was in Sarajevo or like one of those Balkan states, and nobody said anything. The Israelis attacked a diplomatic mission, a building that's adjoined to the diplomatic mission, and the whole world was silent about it. When the Iranians finally retaliated after all these attacks that had happened against Iranian nationals and against Iranian interests, not only in Syria, but also inside Iran, suddenly the world started playing it for almost 3 to 4 days before the Iranian retaliation by saying, oh, the Iranians are going to attack the Israelis. The Israelis are the victims over here. They play with the narrative. They shift the narrative. And nobody's buying it anymore. The whole world saw it.
And plus, we do know, though, the American administration is basically lying about it. If I'll go to Eric right now, Tehran gave a 72-hour notice in what they were going to do. Okay, they were very transparent in what they wanted to accomplish. But Eric, Israel is said to have been in a dilemma right now as we speak on how to retaliate. Now, we are told that the American administration doesn't want to be involved in an Israeli attack on Iran. I really don't buy it, okay? I mean, the influence that the Israel lobby has over American politicians and the media won't allow Joe Biden to abandon the Israelis, which means, you know, now we have this, we actually, you could make the argument, I certainly would, that we are in the middle of the next world war, because we can see how the dividing lines are happening. Russia, Iran, we have the axis of resistance. The United States is not going to walk away from this. And a lot of American politicians, particularly in the Senate, would really welcome an open attack on Iran, which would be disastrous for everyone. Eric.
Well, yeah, but the IPAC, yes, this is its finest moment now. It's got the Congress really in its clutches. Even if Biden wanted to do what would get him reelected, would make him a great president, would be to insist on this a ceasefire and force Israel to negotiate properly. That would be, of course, a wonderful thing, but Israel assassinates. That's what it's great at. It's very much like Ukraine. It's at that stage in its distorted development that it goes after terrorist activities, like assassinating leaders. Kennedy, both Kennedys, I'm convinced were Mossad operations. We don't know 9/11, but these huge terrorist operations. Really, Israel is very good at this, and that's what it's built itself on. So I think even, let's say, Trump. Trump's kind of wishy-washy on Ukraine. He seems to be very pro-Israel, but he doesn't like Netanyahu. He could flip. He could just say,
well,
no.
Eric, I'm not going to give Donald Trump a credit with him with a lot of virtue. But, Eric, I'm pretty sure he doesn't want to be a war president in this scenario right here. I think he is very terrified of it because it is a stench that will everyone that's involved in it on the wrong side, the stench that they will carry for the rest of their it will be their legacy. Of what they're doing right now. But Stephen, if I could go back to you, what does the U.S. really even have a choice right now? Okay, and you can't say security commitment is ironclad and then it's not ironclad. How are they going to square the circle?
The United States funded and funded the Israeli military and has been helping and supporting the Israeli military and been sending aid and all of that from the American taxpayer money. But the air defense system that Israel is using that from America, and they have helped Israel in this last attack, and that is all came. But Biden administration told Benjamin Netanyahu, we defended you, but we're not going to participate with you in a war. Biden does not want to go into a war, a region war, just because of Benjamin Netanyahu. This is what he does not understand. What happened on Monday cost over $1.3 billion. That's all coming out of the American taxpayer money. That's not Israel paying it. Not the Israeli people are paying it. That's the American taxpayer money. And the Americans and whoever is next president, and that won't happen, but they should stop all this aid. The Americans that money should be going to the American people, not on funding wars and supporting a psycho like Benjamin Netanyahu, who just wants to take the whole region and the whole world into war.
Leila, one of the things that really worries me, you're in Lebanon here. Do you think as a result of Iran's retaliation, and we've discussed that it was overwhelmingly a success in terms of what it wanted to achieve, how do people in Lebanon feel now? Is it more likely or less likely the Israelis would attack your country?
I can tell you because I'm covering basically the Blue Line villages stationed in South Lebanon. And basically, I also roam around Lebanon to speak to people from all walks of life and different religions and factions. Most of the political factions support the resistance in Lebanon in terms of fighting a common enemy, that's the Israeli occupation. Everybody still remembers what the Israelis did to Lebanon in 2006, the Israeli aggression on Lebanon. But at the same time, there are small pockets and factions who basically support the Israelis, which is very weird. But then again, if you look at their history, they collaborated with the Israelis during the occupation in Lebanon. But these are insignificant in terms of numbers. The Lebanese do expect an escalation at any point because they know that this kind of occupation is treacherous. They don't need an excuse to go and escalate. However, when you open multiple fronts basically against that occupation, it thinks twice before basically expanding the front. So we have a power of deterrence for the time being. The way I see it going forward, we will be seeing an escalation because at the end of the day, this is not the Israeli war against basically the Palestinians only. This is the American war against Russian interests in the region. That's why we saw the Russians move 10 battalions to the front with the occupied Syrian Golan Heights. And at the same time, it's a show of power, and it's a major struggle between not only the Israelis and Palestinians, as I said, but also the Israelis and the Iranians on the other hand. That's why we've seen NATO powers move their frigates and ships to the Eastern Mediterranean region over the past 7 months. That's why basically we saw a major kind of alliance between the axis of resistance along all fronts in Iraq and Syria and Lebanon and even in Yemen. And they are basically being supported by the Iranians at one point or another. Russia came to the rescue to its own ally, Syria, and said, we are going to help if the war actually expands more than that, because the Russians understand the kind of game that's being played at the moment. It's a power struggle between the Americans and the Russians in the Eastern Mediterranean.
You know, Eric, the administration, the Biden administration, says that it doesn't want an escalation. But are they in the driver's seat? I mean, they may not want it, but they may have to just go along because, you know, if the administration is going to tolerate a genocide in Gaza, they're going to go along with a greater war. I mean, you know, there's a continuation in thought there. Eric.
Well, the U.S. is tied to Israel, so if one goes, the other goes. That's why it really is an existential situation for both, because it's carried on now for 70 years, and its future, the U.S. sees its future through Israel in the Middle East, and it's got to change that. Israel has got to become a normal Middle East country. Somehow it's got to transform itself.
Yeah, but Eric, for that to happen, the Zionist project has to come to an end.
Has to end. I know. It will happen already. Thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, I think, of Israelis have left in the last 6 months. And that's a continual bleeding. So Israel, it's marching forward into the future, but if the people are leaking out and that this whole Aliyah project is revealed as a farce, then that is your existential crisis. So I don't see this really resolving easily. It's going to be a lot of hand-wringing.
Leila, let me ask you the last 25 seconds. Is this the end of the Zionist project? Are we witnessing it?
On October 7, I held a space and I said, this war will either speed up a two-state solution or we'll see Israel as a different kind of scenario, not even Israel as we know it today. And I believe that we are beyond a two-state solution. Israel will not exist as we know it today. It could be a one state. It could be an end of it. We don't know. But the situation going forward is going to be completely different.
Okay, on that note, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Toronto, Beirut, and in Latakia. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RTC. And next time, remember, crosstalk rules.